Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Hunting Seasons, the podcast that dares to binge watch, deep dive, and break down a season of television each and every episode. I'm Broderick Gordis.
I'm Damask Leary.
And today we'll be discussing Only Murders in the Building Season 1. And to do that, we are joined by Twitch streamer, podcaster, and my little brother, Liam Gordis. How you doing, Liam?
I'm out of breath because I got up for a second to get my jumper and I've come back and I was rushing and for some reason I'm out of breath. I'm
glad. It was a quick change.
I was rushing because I was like, you started recording. I didn't want to waste your tape.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
We're straight to tape here. Yeah.
224 gigabytes of free space remaining on my computer.
I had to rush.
I appreciate it.
Don't have big files get these days.
Do you want to tell everyone what you're doing these days? You've obviously been doing your podcast, but also you've got some other stuff going on at the moment, don't you?
Yeah. So I have my podcast, Shit Dates, where we talk about all about bad dating experiences. I'm also been streaming on Twitch a lot for the last 6 months.
It's been 6 months already.
Wow. It's crazy. And we've built a sort of a little community there. It's a lot of fun. I do a lot of like drawing, playing games, D&D. I'm called a variety streamer. That's what they call themselves.
Exactly. Right.
That's what they call themselves these days. It's just it's a good term for, I don't know what I'm doing. I'll just do anything on stream.
In particular, Arcane Arcade has been the big one. You did that a couple of Wednesdays back now. Was your first episode of that, which is a Dungeons and Dragons game that you're DMing, and then you've got the next episode coming up this Wednesday?
Yep, this Wednesday. Is this going to come out in time for that?
Yep, it certainly will.
Yep, fantastic. This Wednesday, twitch.tv/LiamDraws_. We do it for charity, so throughout the game, you can donate. For every $5 you donate, it goes to Headspace, which is an incredible charity in Australia, all about youth mental health, but also... every $5 you donate, you can add an advantage or a disadvantage, which affects the game and the people playing the game. If you don't know anything about Dungeons & Dragons, that was all gibberish. But if you do, it really affects the game. And they're about to fight a dragon.
They are about to fight a dragon. I've given you 10 disadvantages, so make it easier.
I haven't rolled a dice yet.
There's
a lot of RP. They didn't get what... I threw so many things at them. They didn't get one. Anyway.
What time is that, Australian Daylight Savings Time?
Yeah, 7:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time.
Daylight Savings. ADT. Yes, correct. Speaking of Twitch, I want to thank everyone again who was... joined us on the Twitch stream we did last week for our Ted Lasso Season 2 review. That was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. We will do that again sometime. I also very quickly, just before we get to reviewing Only Murders in the Building, we're going to be reviewing Squid Game next week. And I particularly, I think, have been feeling a little bit conflicted about covering Netflix stuff with everything that's happening at the moment in terms of the Dave Chappelle stuff and the response to that. And then... the walkouts from trans employees and people getting fired and stuff. And I felt a little bit icky about the idea of covering that sort of thing. I think we're still going to cover Squid Game and probably Cowboy Bebop for the end of the year. But I just want to put out there that I support everything that people are doing to try and get some change happening at Netflix. And particularly support anyone who's decided that they don't want to support Netflix anymore. I think that's a very fair and wise choice if you're someone who is unsubscribing, which I know some listeners of the show have done. I think that's a really, really fair thing to do. And I'd be interested in anyone's feedback if they've got any suggestions for what we could or couldn't do around that stuff. I don't know how you're feeling about it, Damask.
I agree with you in a lot of ways. I just kind of want to see how it plays out, I suppose.
Sure.
Yeah, is the thing. I want to... Once, you know, we've done the walkouts and stuff are happening, what kind of moves Netflix, the corporation, will do to kind of make amends and right some things. So I'm just kind of going to just see what happens at this stage.
Fair enough. In the meantime, let's get to our spoiler-free review of Only Murders in the Building, Season 1.
Let me clue you in.
Season in review.
Only Murders in the Building is an American mystery comedy television series created by Steve Martin and John Hoffman and premiered on Hulu on August 31, 2021. In Australia, it's streaming on Disney Plus as part of their Stars category, which may be the case around the world. Please check your local guides. The show follows three true crime podcast obsessed strangers who, after a murder in their affluent Upper West Side apartment building, start their own podcast covering their investigation of the murder. Only Murders in the Building boasts an impressive cast led by Steve Martin, Martin Short and Selena Gomez, and supported by Amy Ryan, Jane Lynch, Tina Fey, Nathan Lane and Sting, among others. Season 1 of Only Murders in the Building consists of 10 episodes, each coming in around 32 minutes, and took us approximately 5 hours and 20 minutes to watch. In September of 2021, the series was renewed for a second season. So before we get to our review of Only Murders in the Building Season 1, I wanted to ask you both, are you fans of murder mystery shows, true crime docos, and particularly true crime podcasts, Liam?
Yes, yes, and yes. Also, check your local guides. What?
Yeah.
Like, check your newspaper to find out where this stream is.
TV Guide to do it, cover it, right?
Yeah. The TV Guide. Can I get the TV Week, please? Yes, I have watched, I mean, talking of Netflix, I have watched basically every single true crime documentary there is on that platform, plus the ones on other platforms. I've listened to all of Serial. I was a big fan of Making a Murderer. Also,
oh, yeah, we covered that too. Yeah,
I was a really big fan of My Favorite Murder for a very long time until it just felt like the same thing over and over again. Yeah, big fan. And also, when it comes to like murder mystery TV, love a crime television show. Love a crime film like Knives Out was one of my favorite movies in the last couple of years. I've always wanted to write a murder mystery film. So, yes, to answer your question.
Damask, same question.
I'm a huge true crime podcast fan. I was just going through my podcast app and every second one is kind of some kind of investigative, like, what crime? Who knew what, when kind of stuff. I fucking love it. In fact, you know, as I've mentioned in other podcasts, two of the franchises of Real Housewives this season are taking a true crime path, which is extremely exciting that I can like combine two of my favorite things. And I can't wait because I also, you know, listen to an amazing Real Housewives podcast. And so there's elements of now true crime in that podcast as well, which is great. I love The Jinx and was it the Staircase?
Yep.
Back when you could only find it in random sections on YouTube, all that kind of, I don't know. It's all very morbid and I think we have a deeper understanding of what it means to be a victim and what side are we choosing to tell and stuff. So I think I'm more like, yeah, aware of that stuff, but I still like to know where the darkness comes from. I don't know why, but it's a morbid fascination. I also love, you know, shows like American Vandal, which kind of pulled that apart, but also was like a love letter to true crime as well. One of my favorite Netflix shows ever made. It's just such good quality. If anyone's a true crime fan, they definitely need to watch it.
American Vandal is a good thing to bring up here in comparison to, I mean, I don't know if we talk about reviewing this just yet, but in comparison to what they were both trying to sort of do.
Yes.
And two different ways of doing it.
Yes.
And yeah.
listener of the show, GJ Corbin, brought that up. Actually, just before we went to air, I was asking on Twitter for people to send some comments through and they put through that particular comparison. I hadn't thought of it yet, but it is a really, really important one, I think. In a similar way, I think Knives Out is a bit like that as well, where they're both trying to take existing genres of storytelling, one the documentary style true crime and one more the typical Agatha Christie murder mystery, and like deconstruct them and comment on them as well as being a love letter to them, which I think is really particularly, if you can do that well, it's a very, very powerful thing, I think. And so in terms of what I like, I guess I do like murder mystery shows. I don't watch a whole lot of them. Like, I certainly don't watch procedurals. I don't watch Bones or Castle every week or anything like that, you know what I mean? But I don't dislike them, if that makes sense. In terms of movies, yeah, the one that comes to mind is Knives Out. In terms of true crime docos, yes, The Jinx, Making a Murderer, great examples of shows that I've really enjoyed along the way. And then when it comes to podcasting, I haven't listened to that much. I did listen to some stuff around, what was the Golden State Killer stuff when that was all happening, which was particularly fascinating. But Serial Season 1 is really the one that I have fully invested in completely. Coming into that season, that series maybe, and I particularly mean Season 1, about halfway through and jumping on when everyone was jumping on and staying up all night listening to catch up.
Like, and being scared. Like, I remember being in the house by myself and listening to the latest episode, and I would be scared. I was like, when's Brod coming home?
I couldn't sleep. It was nights where I couldn't sleep.
Yeah. It was intense, but you really wanted to be there at the forefront of it. Like, it was a real moment in time, but I've never really recaptured that as much since Serial, though obviously it's from Serial, not to say that Serial was the first, but from Serial, that genre of podcasting has blown up, no doubt, since. All right, with all that in mind, Liam, would you like to give your spoiler-free review of Only Murders in the Building Season 1?
Sure thing. I haven't written this down, but here's some thoughts. Only Murders in the Building is, on paper, sounds like a great show with a great cast and a great premise, and ultimately, for me, Only Murders in the Building felt like trash, but I liked it. It's hard to explain. Like, I don't think, overall, I think it's a well-produced show. The writing left something to be, like, left, oh, I don't know what I'm
bit
trying to
be desired.
Left to be desired. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, there were moments where it were really funny and I really enjoyed the writing. I think, As a show that I could just put on and not have to think about, I enjoyed. But a show that wants you to think about what's going on and is like, you know, there's this big mystery and everything, I think it just fell flat in that regard. Great performances from everybody. I actually really enjoyed Selena Gomez in this. I've never really watched much with her before, but I really enjoyed her in this. It's a tough one because it's on one hand, I really enjoyed it. On the other hand, from a technical point of view, I was watching it going, I don't enjoy this. And it's like, I'm in this weird middle ground with it where I don't know which way I'm falling at the moment. Let's talk about it so I can decide.
Damas.
Wonderful. Okay. So I got to say, this is probably one of the cutest shows about murder that I've ever seen. I don't know if I found the mystery interesting or particularly innovative. What I do know is that I had a lot of fun watching the show week to week. I think 90% of that is Martin Short, Steve Martin, and Selena Gomez hanging out together. You know, I couldn't get enough of that. Everything Martin Short says is hilarious. He's by far the best character and without a doubt an absolute comedic genius. Obviously, we all know that. Steve Martin has the sweetest energy of any man on the planet. All those people that think Tom Hanks is the nicest guy in Hollywood can suck my dick. Steve Martin for the win. And I'm both I'm both envious and so happy for Selena Gomez to have the opportunity to work with those guys and have some fun making a really quality show. Obviously, I was too old, but I used to watch her on Wizards of Waverly Place. And she's done like a couple like teen movies and stuff. Oh, Princess Protection Program. It's another one I watched. It was truly terrible. That was her and Demi Lovato. Terrible film. Yeah. So it was really nice to kind of see her be able to be in something like this with people of that caliber. Like, fucking hell. So this show is very, very silly. The murder doesn't actually hold much weight. We don't really know the victim. And I think this helps the show veer away from being super depressing or gross, I guess. It never feels like that much of a tragedy that this person is dead. They just kind of don't dwell on it. They're like, you know what? We're going to have fun with these three characters. Don't look too long at it, et cetera, et cetera. Because the emotional investment in the show comes from the budding friendship of, you know, three lonely misfits who each have a deep passion for true crime. You know, you take three people who are incredibly lonely and haunted by their individual past. You give them a hobby, and that hobby that suits them best is, of course, investigating the life of a stranger who was also lonely and haunted by the past. It's a silly premise that's used to explore character more than shock you with its twists and turns. And I was totally fine with that. The world building of the show is pretty good. We have an array of kooky characters that live in the building, and each helps set the tone. I kept watching it and thinking, like, it feels like a novella, like some kind of short story.
Mm-hmm.
And I really kind of enjoyed that. It's definitely not perfect, but every week it felt like a warm hug. And yeah, I had a good time.
All right. So before we went to air, I put a message out on Twitter. I only gave the listeners and people following us on Twitter 25 minutes to respond. So sorry, Steve, if you missed out on that one. You said your thoughts lost the ether. My bad. I'll put them in off topic, hot topic if you want to include them. Anyway, GJ Corbin did write in and they said, Only Murders in the Building is cute. It's not particularly funny or very intriguing of a mystery and does nothing all that interesting with its premise, but solid chemistry between actors and a decent enough script leads to a shallow but enjoyable show. And honestly, I think they've pretty much nailed my thoughts on it.
I think we've all said the same thing.
Pretty much. I think generally it's okay. It's fine. It's decent enough. I guess where I've struggled is I watched the pilot early on, I think when it first came out even, I basically left the rest of the series. We've got a million shows to watch for the podcast, so stuff gets pushed to the side. I came back to it this week and I watched over the course of a week, a couple of episodes at a time, which wasn't a bad way to watch it, I must say. But what I noticed in the month or two that this was on was there was all this hype around it. People couldn't stop talking about how good the show was. I guess I don't really understand why there was so much hype. I think it's, again, as I said, it's fine. But I don't think it's really deserving of the sort of praise it's been getting. That's one of the best shows of the year. I think what it does well is that it's most fun when it's playing with the true crime podcast tropes. You know, the theme song that deliberately invokes the serial theme. Mm. The name of Tina Fey's podcaster of Cinder Caning, which is so much like Sarah Koenig. Like, when I made that little connection, as someone who cares about serial, that made me giggle a little bit. The Squarespace ad at the end of one episode that when she's podcasting and like all those things, if you're a fan of that genre in particular podcasting, they're nice little jokes, but it doesn't go particularly far with that beyond just sort of being cute with the idea, which is what GJ also said. They said, compare it to American Vandal, there's just so much left to be desired, which is what you said, Liam. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people have very similar thoughts on this, at least people that we know in our community. And there are some very fun performances. Martin Short, in particular, shined for me. I thought he was just having lots of fun with the character of Oliver Putnam and was generally the highlight of any scene that he was in. You know, his phrasing, delivery, but also his physical comedy, which has always been a part of what he does.
He's always the best. No matter what he's in, he's always the best.
And it's funny. I don't really think I've seen heaps of Martin Short. I remember he had a part. Was Martin Short in, like, Arrested Development for an episode or two at one stage as well? Was that Martin Short? I feel like it was.
Probably. I'm trying to remember.
Sounds like something he would have been in. Yeah.
I think I remember feeling like, oh, this might be a comedian who's a little bit past their time now. And maybe I didn't get the bit he was doing. But this, he proved to me in Only Murders in the Building that I had misjudged that. And he has still got not just a lot to offer, he's still an incredible talent. And Tina Fey, I thought, was really great casting for the role of Cinder Caning as well. I thought that was a perfect role for her. Where I struggled is
the pointedness on the word struggled is really scaring me, but go on.
I don't think I was entertained. Not as entertained as the premise or the talent of the show promises. I think at my best, I was amused. At its worst, it did have some moments where I thought it was just downright bad, with some bad writing and odd structure or logical plot holes. And I know it's a comedy, but there was enough emphasis on the murder that it wanted you to care about the murder and to be invested in the mystery. I don't think it did a particularly good job there. Some perfect examples of, like, bad writing. There's an episode where they're in a car and, like, there are two characters that are talking the entire time. They're catching up on their past and they're going and solving a mystery of what this note means. And they get to the place and the one character turns around and says, actually, don't go in there. I don't want you to. I'm just sick of this whole thing. It's like, you guys have been together for about 10 minutes in a fucking car, and the entire time you were helping this other character out, why the... Like, I just didn't understand... Like, none of that logical character stuff was happening. It felt really, really clunky and put together. The pacings and the structure of the episodes, I think it thought... Early on, I just kept thinking, these episodes don't feel particularly well, like, structured. It came out of the episode, and it kind of felt like you were giving me another piece of the puzzle, but I didn't care all that much about what the story of that episode was for that character. It didn't nail, like, if you do a three-act structure, set up an idea. Sometimes they did this for characters, and sometimes they got to the end of the episode, I'm like, oh, it's over. They didn't really get to that place that I thought they were going to get to with this week's story moment. Just things like that. And there's a logical thing that happens in one episode involving a police officer that we'll get to in spoilers that, like, blew my mind that the show was willing to do that. And it just frustrated me no end. The biggest problem for me, though, was that it just sort of missed the mark on the character work. I often got what the show was going for. I know what it wanted me to feel. And I did want to feel it too, but I just didn't. I kind of wish it... I wish I felt more. I think the reason I didn't is because I didn't feel like the characters necessarily felt all that much. There was a lot of lip service to ideas of loneliness and regret and so on, but I don't know if much of that was really on the screen. In the end, when you mix in the best bits with the show with the worst, it still equates to something okay, but there was undoubtedly a clunk to this show. A simultaneous stiffness paradoxically coupled with a sloppiness. Simply put... is lesser than the sum of its parts.
That was the grossest description of the show. It's just a bit stiff and sloppy.
And then he went and he kept the slur because he's like, simply put. And you better keep that in. You better not edit that out.
Yeah, that's amazing. But I do. I think it is lesser than the sum of its parts in a little way. And my takeaway question is if some of the excitement around this show was because Steve Martin and Martin Short were doing something together again. And people were just really excited to see that. I don't blame them for that. But I wonder whether some people maybe had more time or enjoyed the show more because they were just happy to see those two together again. I don't know if anyone feels that.
Yeah, of course that's what's happening,
and that's fine.
I don't think anyone...
I don't know if I agree that some people might have that. But I didn't have, like, a nostalgia of these two being together again. I just enjoyed them together because their chemistry is amazing.
Well, and they clearly work so well together. They're so good. I mean, I do have nostalgia. Like, Three Amigos is one of my favorite comedy films. It's so fucking good. I recently rewatched it, I don't know, like, last year or the year before or something. It's just one of those rare comedy films that, you know, is full of men but holds up. Because that is their sense of humor. Like, that's quite wholesome, but really quick-witted and just beautiful kind of characterizations and stuff. So I was really excited to see them back together again. But I also just think it's, even if, like Liam was saying, if you don't have that history, the two of them together, it's just really wonderful to see.
And with the addition of Selena Gomez as well, who knew that that was going to work so well? That just gelled.
Just a live update. Steve did get back just in time, Steve. Well done. Okay, sometimes it's a little forced, but on the whole, I'm loving the chemistry. And to be honest, Selena Gomez is a revelation. I was dimly aware of her before as someone who's inexplicably famous for being famous, I guess. But she's pretty damn good in this role. There you go. So
she is not famous for being famous.
No, I disagree with that. But maybe people who aren't aware of her back catalogue feel that way. That they know Selena Gomez because she's Selena Gomez, not because...
Yeah.
Of her previous catalogue of stuff.
Steve, you ignorant bitch.
Steve also says, I confess I haven't finished the series, so this is one I'll be saving the deep dive section until afterwards, but so far it does seem to live up to the hype. So Steve, a little bit happy with this show than maybe the rest of us are. Final score out of 5 stars. Liam, what would you give this out of 5?
I'm going to give it a 3. I think 3 is, it's not shit, but it's not, you know, high top of my list, you know what I mean? Like, it's 3 is the perfect number for this.
Damask?
I'm going to give it 3.5. I had a really good time. I love the cast. I feel like it's something that I will rewatch when I'm really hungover and I'm feeling sorry for myself. Like, I just think it's going to be a really good comfort watch. I had a really good time and I'm definitely going to come back for season 2.
I am also going to give it a 3. which is ultimately the same score I gave The Falcon and the Winter Soldier and What If this year. Both shows that had high highs and low lows, or were just kind of whatever the entire way through. At some time, times I was tempted to give it a 2.5, but it when it frustrated me, I can get, maybe I just get easily frustrated by things. You know, I'm the hypercritical one here sometimes. But ultimately, I do think it's decent enough. I went back and rewatched the pilot afterwards, and like, yeah, this is an okay show. It's decent. I'll give it a 3.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Before we dive into spoilers, we'd like to ask everyone who enjoys the show to please review us on Apple Podcasts. Nothing helps the show to grow more than by throwing 5 stars and maybe a couple of nice words our way.
And to sweeten the deal, if we reach 25 written reviews on Apple Podcasts, we will finally review Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 1.
You know what? I don't even want to review that anymore. The fact that we've practically begged people for years... I'm getting bitter about it.
I like the reverse psychology. This is good.
That's right. Yeah, I don't even want to. We would also love you to share Hunting Seasons with anyone in your life that watches way too much TV, which is probably everyone. So yeah, share, like, subscribe, whatever people say these days.
Next week, we'll be back with our review of Squid Game Season 1. If you'd like to contribute to our discussion of Squid Game, or if you have any thoughts on Only Murders in the Building, you can write to us or send us an audio recording that we may include on a future episode to contact at huntingseasonspodcast.com or find us on Twitter at huntingscast, which is exactly what GJ and Steve did this week. But right now, let's talk spoilers for Only Murders in the Building Season 1.
You're now entering the spoiler zone.
Spoiler warning. From here on, we'll be discussing everything that happens in Season 1 of Only Murders in the Building. Before listening any further, we recommend watching all of Only Murders in the Building up to this point. If you've not yet done so, proceed with caution. There are spoilers ahead.
You have been warned.
Deep dive.
It's cool to know other people think about this stuff too.
I'll be honest, guys. I'm not sure I've got a heap to say about this, which is interesting considering it's a murder mystery show and is a character focus show as well. I'm surprised I don't have more to say. I think that kind of leans into my overall thoughts on the show, which is it's a little more shallow than maybe it could be, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
How do we feel about the mystery overall? Was it a good mystery? Was it fair? Did you figure out the killer, any of that sort of stuff?
Yes.
Yes.
I figured out the killer in the first episode.
Wow.
And she wasn't even in the episode. And that's why. Because her name was in the opening credits.
Okay.
And right. She wasn't in the first episode. I'm like, okay. Like, if you're going to put someone in the opening credits... This, like, and from that moment, I'm like, this is the killer. And that ruined it for me because there was I feel like there should have been a twist or something because that person wasn't in the opening credits.
Would it have been more sus if they didn't, if Amy Ryan showed up and they didn't have her in the credits?
No, if she was, yes, it would have been more sus if she showed up and she was in the credits.
But maybe just wait until she's in the episodes before you start.
Exactly, yeah. Sure. You do that all the time in TV. He already listens. There could have been a point where they saw her, like he just noticed her or something walking past because to, you know, show that this is going to be a relationship that Steve Martin's character is going to have.
Was Nathan Lane in the credits, the opening credits?
No.
I don't think I knew Nathan Lane was in the show until
yeah,
he showed exactly. up. Mm. That one scene was like, holy shit.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Exactly. My point, more proven by this. Like, this character is clearly going to be a very big part of the show, enough to be in the opening credits. Like, almost like, I think it was like fourth or fifth bill in the opening credits.
Right.
And it's like, and below
the... unnaturally high.
Yeah, unnaturally high. And... that may be me just reading into that, but I was right.
I mean, that is part of how these shows work, though. Unfortunately, if you've got any familiarity, this happens all the time. When you've watched enough TV, you start to pick up on things like that. I remember watching Dexter and figuring out who the murderer was based on the fact that a character that shouldn't have had lines.
The show
had
was
lines.
Called Dexter?
No.
That gives it away straight away.
Dexter season 3, I want to say. There was this person that was... I don't actually want to say what the killer was. People might... Because it's a spoiler, I might be catching up before Dexter New Blood.
I think at this point.
Yeah.
Now, Dexter New Blood's coming up. But in season 2 or 3, I think it was 3.
Season 3. What are you talking about? Yeah.
There was, and there was a character that got, that wouldn't normally get lines.
Isn't the machete
sort of,
killer? That's the killer. That's,
which one?
It's called the machete killer.
Yeah, the machete killer, correct. And there was a character that got lines in an episode. I'm like, oh, they're the killer.
Yeah.
They're obviously the killer. And you've just,
honestly, since you've said that to me, I have been so ultra aware of people who have lines in TV shows based on, like, if I watch a TV show comes on and, like, character has a line who isn't usually in the show, they're going to be very involved. As, like, that's honestly, you broke the glass ceiling in that.
Broke the glass ceiling.
Sorry. So let me say it again. Sorry. You shattered the illusion for
Thank
me.
Thank you.
There we go.
Broke the glass ceiling.
Brod is famous on this podcast for breaking through that glass ceiling. Well done, Brod.
I've been watching a lot of Love Island and they get all their metaphors wrong.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. I'll be honest, I didn't notice Amy Ryan's name in the credits. I didn't notice anyone's name because as soon as that music started, I was just bopping. I was like, this is a tune that's perfect for like what they're, you know, true crime stuff. I was like, this is a jam.
Oh, yeah. The music in this show is great. And it does, like you said earlier, Brod, it does
invoke
the serials. Like, it's so close.
Episode two, they do the ting, ting, ting build up. But it builds up into the rest of the theme. And I was like, it was at that point, it was just like, oh, it's serial reference. I totally get it now.
Yeah.
Because it's, oh, boy. If I ever hear that serial theme.
I feel like it pops in my head all the time. Which I don't know if it's like somehow I'm cursed and I will be murdered one day. Like I'm just walking around with the serial theme in the back of my head. But it's such a good theme.
I need to make that my ringtone again. In BoJack Horseman,
was
it... I think it was Diane had...
Diane, yeah.
Diane had the serial theme.
I'm Sarah Kading and you're getting a message.
And this is your phone ringing or something like that. Oh, yeah. I need to make that my ringtone again. It was so good.
So I mean, I didn't guess the... mystery, like how she did it or anything, but I honestly that ruined a little bit for me seeing that and going okay. And if it hadn't have turned out to be her, I wouldn't have been upset. I would have been like, oh, you know, she's just in there because she's, you know, she's a big name in terms of who she in, like, you know, her back catalog stuff. But like, because she did turn out to be the murderer, I was like, that kind of ruined it for me. But I mean, there might be on my own here.
Yeah, I just don't think I was invested in the mystery at all, which somehow didn't affect my ability to enjoy the show. I guess, like, you know, it depends what you're coming to the show for. I would have loved like a really cool mystery, being like, what's got to happen next? Which I didn't feel. I was just happy to be hanging out with those people, I suppose. But yeah, obviously, at a certain point, this new what's her name? Jan is on the scene. I'm like, oh, well, she's very likely that she's going to be the killer at the end.
Yeah.
all that stuff.
And the way she's like pointing different directions and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Throughout it. Like,
the thing that annoyed me was when Oliver and Mabel started just deciding that she was the worst. I was like, oh, this doesn't make any sense. She's not being that annoying. In fact, she's being totally reasonable. She's like, and they started being annoying towards him. Like, they're only doing this so they, at the end, they can say, oh, we had a feeling about you the entire time sort of thing. It was like, it wasn't until later and then she started to point back towards the guy with the cat. I was like, oh, that's the first bad thing she's actually said that's made her annoying. Every other time they did it when she brought baked goods, it was being supportive.
But that was more of a comment on them,
yeah,
especially Martin Short's character and his reaction to not wanting to let other people be
in
part
the group.
Of it. You know, he's being selfish. That's what it was more a comment on their character than it was on her being actually annoyed.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% I agree with you, Liam.
Yeah. Because that happens a few times in the show. And then
it's showing that they're jerks is what
exactly.
it's doing.
And also it shows the hypocrisy with it when Martin Short's character brings is that Oliver's character's name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oliver brings in the true crime fans in episode 6.
I think so.
Is it?
But then she did start doing dumb things after that. It's like then sure, she went like, pointed back towards the cat guy. I was like, that is a dumb thing. No, now that, she's doing something.
Absolutely, but I don't think their initial response without any was without reason. It's just their own stupid reason. You know what I mean? Like it's their own thoughts.
Yeah.
I think it was episode 4. I was like, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Jan that's the killer. I had no theory as to why. I was like, is she the mum of the girl who got pushed off the building in the flashback, something like that? Like, I got no idea what the reason is. But it was that just like, I've watched enough of these things to know that this person who's going to get close to the group and particularly close to one person, which is going to make it heartbreak when they turn out to be the killer, is going to be the killer. She was just a big enough name for a role that was too small for what she was doing sort of thing. It just fits.
It wasn't, ultimately, it wasn't a very what's the word?
Innovative.
It wasn't particularly intriguing
innovative, yeah, in terms of a mystery show, which you sort of, now that there's been so many mystery shows, you sort of want something. Well, when we talk about this, Knives Out being and also American Vandal being a comment and a love letter, a comment, but also building on that idea.
Mm.
This was obviously trying to be a love letter to a serial or.
Yeah.
I don't think it is a love letter. I think it was references to that. It was like the setting was it, but not a love letter.
I think it's probably more just like, you know, a modern American Midsummer Murder episode, like show. Like that's kind of what it was doing. Obviously, there has elements of true crime to kind of give character motivation and stuff. But that's kind of like, because you watch an episode of Midsummer Murders, you know who fucking does it. It's very clear who's doing it. Those shows are not particularly shocking or twisty and turny. I mean, they try to be. That's kind of part of the fun. But we all know
they
what
also,
we're doing there.
Those shows or any
they
other
have
procedural,
a formula.
Though. Those shows and any other procedural, there you know the end of the mystery at the end of the episode, though. It's like when it's one that's stretched out over an entire season, you are, and especially when it's coming out weekly, like you are, they're trying to leave breadcrumbs for you to figure it out, or and red herrings and stuff like that. Like once you build it up over the course of 10 episodes, I think you are building to a certain expectation that the mystery is going to be particularly compelling, or the answer is going to be compelling, and it wasn't. At least with the Midsummer's Murder, it's like you might figure it out in the first 10 minutes, but then you've done it and you move on to the next one, next episode. And that's what normal procedurals do. Like if you watch an episode of Criminal Minds or you watch an episode of
I guess
Rose
I just didn't
like
feel like this huge, just with the tone of the show, I didn't expect it to be super twisty turny. I don't know why. I just like,
but they were
but the
acting
show
like
did it.
The show was acting like it was.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Well, like, yeah, the totally. Time. The characters thought it.
No, the show did. The show would leave you with cliffhangers at the end of episodes.
They would put them in the back of a van at the end of an episode.
Or
they
have,
would,
have,
and then suddenly at the start of the next episode, they're out of the van and back at the house.
They were still in the van.
They were still in the van, but took them two. Like it took 5 minutes for them to be not in non-danger anymore.
Exactly right. Or you would have the bit where you flash forward 3 months or whatever it is to see Tina Fey's character talking about only murderers in the building. Like, they were constantly trying to build up, like, what does this mean? You'll have to wait and find out. What does this mean? This is a twist. And, like, at the end of the first episode, which was probably the most effective one, was finding out that Mabel knew Tim Kono. Mm. And I was like, oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And then the show never repeated that on any level that was particularly compelling, I didn't think. It did it once and it tried to do it again and again and again and it couldn't live up to the first one.
Do you think this show is maybe 3 or 4 years too late? Like,
I just don't think it's as clever as I think it is.
Jumping on the whole idea of, you know, referencing heavily things like Serial, if this show came out around the same time that American Vandal came out, when
I
like,
think
would
living
have been
in
the
shadow of American Vandal is a big problem, and Knives Out is like you've had two fantastic deconstruction / entries into this genre this is a sillier version of it, but still trying to be compelling. Like, while I agree the mystery wasn't the bit I was enjoying the most, that was mostly because they just weren't pulling it off. And so it was, thank goodness, the chemistry of the performances was there, because that was the bit that you did enjoy.
Yeah.
Maybe if it came out before those other things did it, I would have found it overall better. But yeah, compared to American Vandal or Knives Out, it just doesn't compare.
I mean,
what does, really?
Oh, no, they're both incredible.
Yeah, they're incredible. Yeah. But yeah, no, I see what you're saying.
Maybe that's what you mean by timing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know we're going to talk about specific characters and stuff. Can I talk about a specific episode?
Yes.
Sure.
The episode, I can't remember what number it is, but we all know what the episode is.
The boy in
6B.
The boy in 6B, yeah. The boys in 6B.
Episode 7.
The boy from 6B.
The boy from 6B. That episode, I hated it. It felt like to me, a bunch of people went in the room and went, you know what we're going to do? We're going to do a silent episode. You know, it didn't feel innovative at all to me. It felt like a, look at us, we're doing a whole episode where no one talks. And in terms of the story, it kind of made sense to put it through his perspective. But when he wasn't in the room, there was no reason, character-wise, for these characters to be doing what they were doing. To the point where, if you have watched the show before watching that episode, any of the other episodes, they have been in the same situations and they were talking the whole fucking time. They went to a memorial for Tim Kono and they were talking the whole fucking time. But they went to a they went to a funeral home where they didn't know anybody and they were going to sit there and be quiet. They have broken into people's houses and they were yelling around the room. But they break into this house and they're not going to talk. It frustrated me, because the motivation for them doing what they're doing in this episode made zero sense, but it made sense for the idea of this being a silent episode, but it made zero sense for the characters, and the writing in that episode frustrated me so much. And the fact they were going, look how good we are by doing a silent episode, really annoyed me. And also the dancing stuff in, I could sort of see that working for the stuff between Jan and Steve Martin's character. I can't remember Steve Martin's character's name.
Charles.
Between Jan and Charles, that sort of made sense, but to an extent. It kind of made sense. But
I don't remember the dancing stuff. What are you talking about?
It's like they start dancing, they're listening to music.
They're having a date. And
then they did the Scrabble afterwards.
But it's like, they're like, that seemed like an excuse for them to not be talking, because they had nothing to do with the rest of the episode. They weren't off doing investigations or anything, or trying to be quiet. It's like, hey, look, we're making these guys quiet in the moment because it's sexy or something. That whole episode made me so angry, and I don't know if our mum's gonna listen to this, but she messaged me saying, have you watched the new episode yet? Because my mum was obsessed with talking to me about the show, which is great. I enjoyed it, right? It was a really good thing to connect with. She messaged me like, this is a really good, like, you should see the new episode. And I watched it. I'm like, I can see why you liked it. Yeah, but I'm not going to tell you I didn't like it.
Does that make sense? Cat's out of the bag now.
Like, it was enjoyable, but it's like, there's so many things. I wasn't going to get into a conversation and ruin that for somebody. Does that make sense? Mm. Like, where I can come in here and talk about how much I hated that episode.
Damas, do you have any particular thoughts on that episode?
I mean, I think all of your concerns and, I'm going to say, fury, Liam, somewhat, yeah, I get what you're saying. Certainly didn't bother me the way it bothered you. Yeah, obviously there were many circumstances where, like, well, normally they would be talking here.
It was contrived at times.
But they're choosing not to talk because they have made the decision for it to be a non-speaking episode. That was fine. I was like, oh, this is cute. It's a bit fun, a bit silly. The lengths that they're going to not allow them to talk, but it definitely didn't bother me. No, it was fine. I didn't mind it. I was like, sure, if this is what you want to do as creators, you want to have this episode, sure, whatever.
I appreciate it from the point of doing something for the character of Theo. I like the idea of, we don't see enough representation of, like, disability in general on television, but like something like a deaf character who gets a perspective episode is pretty cool. I do agree the other bits were particularly contrived at times, though, and I see your frustration. My favorite bit, though, which was like, this kind of annoys me, but it shouldn't because this happens with people, you know, verbal people all the time, was a bit where Theo walks into a room and there's no one else in the room, and then sign languages him to himself like, what the fuck was that, or something like that. It's like, I don't know who you were signing to. But again, I guess people just talk to themselves all the time in TV as well, so I really can't be angry at you for doing that. Mm. That's very interesting.
I mean, I talk to my... Am I crazy? I talk to myself.
Do people sign to themselves, though?
It's how they communicate. Why would it be any different?
That's what I mean. And that's why it was like... My initial thought was like, who are you signing
to? That's silly.
But then I was like, well, wait a second. This happens in TV all the time. And I, sometimes it's annoying, but a lot of times I let it go. I should really let this one go as well.
Yeah.
But I do get what you're saying. I think it is... But again, much like the show, I think its ambition is better than its execution, if that makes sense. Like, thematically, I think I like a lot of what this show wants to do. I don't think it necessarily pulled it off particularly well. And maybe, again, and this is going for something different, because Hush is not about anybody with a disability, but there's been one of the best shows, Buffy episodes ever, was a non-verbal episode. It's been done incredibly well before. You're living in the shadow of that episode.
Also made
one of the best episodes of television history ever.
Seriously, one of the best episodes of television
ever. At every point, they're aiming for things that are like the best of. Yes.
And again, I appreciate its ambition.
Yeah.
I don't think its execution is always as good as it
could. Why is Hush so good? Because it makes character sense for these people to be.
Well, they contextualize it for the entire cast. Yes.
So it's like, that's what frustrates me. When a show goes out of its way to try and do something like this and fails miserably, in my opinion, because they're like shoehorning this concept into the show and into the characters and making characters make decisions that they just wouldn't make and they haven't been making consistently, where I can literally give you examples of why when they haven't done this exact thing.
Yeah.
It's like that really frustrated me as a show. And again, I enjoyed watching this show, but it's like, that episode, like, I feel like that episode is going to be talked about as this great episode. It's like, well, no, it wasn't.
Sometimes the shows that you know can be better or know are doing a lot of things right, and when they make, like, obvious silly mistakes are the most frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the ones that were never good. They're like, oh, well, I just hated that show and I'll never watch it again. Yes, it's the ones like that you look at and go, there's so much I enjoy here, but for some reason it's frustrating me, it's just not working. I always have a big reaction to those.
Also,
shows.
Like, one of my favorite things about the show is, you know, the conversations and the talking and stuff that people, these characters
the dialogue.
Having, the dialogue. And then they do that where they can't have a conversation at all. It's like, yeah, anyway.
Can I talk about, like, some of the stuff character-wise that was frustrating me, though?
Mm-hmm.
A good example of that was, like, Mabel and... what was the guy who got out of jail's name?
Oscar. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, I just wish there was a little bit more explanation about that. That's a particularly weird little love romance that they got going that also wasn't particularly compelling. It's like they see each other for the first time in 10 years since he's been in jail, accused of the murder of one of their best friends, who was also his girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
And immediately is like, I've been thinking about you for 10 years in jail. And she's been, I've been thinking about you too. Let's start making good with each other. There's got to be some awkwardness and more tension around that. There has to be a conflicting feeling there because there's the dead friend that they both had that was in between all that, plus the Tim Kono situation. But no, they just start making it like, they were always waiting for each other
also,
on the other
like,
side.
There was a bit of a flashback where maybe there was half a look.
Sure.
That's what I'm saying. It's like there was half a look, but that's all there was. Yeah. There was zero explanation about why so strongly about each other.
It was like drama, real good character, compelling drama was left just sitting on the table.
Yeah.
It's like it's right there, guys. And the fact that you're not going there makes me less invested in them. I don't care about them at all. Because you haven't given me any reason to care about their situation. I don't know if you agree with that at all, Damask.
No, I was just marveling. It was like having the same person just yelling at themselves.
Sorry.
So I didn't want to interrupt the beauty of that moment. Once again,
at least we're consistent with our character.
This is true. Once again, I see what you're saying. Didn't bother me. didn't bother me at all. I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. Yeah. I mean, I did think, oh, he's been in jail for a crime he didn't commit for 10 years and apparently has no trauma about that situation. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I see what you're saying. I don't disagree with you. I just don't have the passion about it, I guess. I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. Moving on.
Can I talk about something I enjoyed about the show?
Yes.
I enjoyed and this is more about the way the show was made. Weirdly, I've been talking about how the way the show was made has annoyed me. I very much enjoyed the each episode narration
being
a different character and in the style of a podcast.
Yeah, that was fun.
Mm-hmm. It was I really enjoyed that. And like at the start of each episode, different people. Yeah, it was really, I liked that a lot. It was a really well.
It was a good framing device.
Good framing device.
Again, I don't think they did enough with it, but it was a good framing device.
I need to ask you guys, what the ending of the season?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Why was
it the start of the season?
Why were Oliver and Charles arrested?
Because they were seeing they're all suspects at the moment because they were in the same.
Why were they arrested?
Because they're suspects.
Why were they arrested? Why were they let out in handcuffs as a suspect? Like, yes, it makes sense for Mabel to be done like that, but they were found there. They were standing in the doorway. Why did they have to be arrested?
I think that's...
Could they not the police just not taking them to the police station?
If they suspect that you are someone who has just murdered somebody, they are going to handcuff you on the way back to the
I just don't think there's any proof to suspect that those two just murdered that person, though.
They were there.
Yeah, they're in the room.
They're in the room.
They're known associates of Mabel.
They were all there.
I know, that just felt like...
We also don't know what the call was. If the police were told there was something going on, maybe that said, I know these people have just killed someone.
Sure, that's fair enough.
I think there's there's enough reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was not even on my list.
I don't know. For some reason, I just thought of that. I'm like, why were they arrested?
No, that
because
makes
it makes sense for Mabel to be arrested, but...
But so, like, because I'm just going to... Was it Oliver and Charles? They burst in and see Mabel. And then after that, at the point the police arrive,
yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
They literally follow them in, basically.
But they didn't see... They were in the room before the police would have seen them in the room.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Another little character thing that stood out to me that I wish there'd been more of it was Charles's anxiety nosebleeds.
Mm.
Like, he seemed pretty sociable most of the time, and it comes up in two extremely convenient points that he's got a nosebleed. I wish it happened more frequently. I wish it really was a part of the character more.
I forgot what that meant.
It happened once when they needed the guy to faint because of blood, and then the next time we see it is because... He realized that Jan had been lying to him, which was fine, but it was like it didn't really inform the character's loneliness the way that they think it did. It needed to happen more frequently. It needed to be a mystery earlier on. It needed to be something that happened the first time that Oliver comes and talks to him while he's sitting at the diner watching the podcast. You know what I mean? It needs to be happen again when Mabel then sits down with them.
Yeah.
Because if the idea is that he can get anxious in these social settings, then... Make it happen. Don't just do it one time to get the guy to faint and then one other time because you realize you forgot to include any other time. It's just like, it's just like, I get what you were going for. Boy, did you mess up the execution. It almost made me wonder sometimes because I really think the half hour times was a good length, but sometimes it felt like episodes were meant to be 45 minutes and then got cut down and they kept having to like strip material away and like take out.
I felt like the season felt like that to me. Because I didn't know that there was only, 10 episodes in the season?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. I didn't know there was only 10 episodes, and I was watching week by week, and episode 9 came out, and then Brod announced on the podcast that you were next week going to review Only Murders in the Building. I'm like, but there's still at least 3 or 4 episodes before this show's done. How are you going to do that? And I looked it up, I'm like, oh, and then the last episode just felt rushed. It came out of nowhere for me. I felt like the season felt like it could have been longer for me. I don't know. Just like that last revelation of her being the murderer and everything just felt very rushed.
Do you think, going back to the mystery for a second, do you think it was it was fair game? Do you think we were meant to be able to figure out who did it beyond the clues that we have as people who understand how like TV and storytelling works?
I mean, the bassoon cleaner, maybe. That was being thrown around for episodes.
It was.
That could have been if you knew what that was.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the one that annoys me is Charles says in the last episode, it's like, your bassoon sounded different on the night of the murder. It sounded recorded.
Yeah.
So I went back to the first episode to see if you could tell that. And there's absolutely no fucking way you could tell that there was it sounded any different to any other time you heard it.
Yeah.
It's like, that's why that frustrates me too, is it's like, it's not really fair game if I can't know that.
Yeah. It's like, and we wouldn't notice that either. Like, if you, because we hadn't heard the bassoon yet in the show. Mm. So make it sound it like a recording. Yeah, I know. Yeah. But make it sound like a recording. Exactly. We're not going to make the connection until we go back and go, oh, it does sound different.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's, you want this to be a show that you can go back and rewatch and see the clues.
Yes. Exactly right. And but that's what frustrated me.
I don't think there was that.
No.
In this show.
No. Damask, do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Damask really enjoyed this show for the show.
And we're yeah, like, I mean, it's that's a
murder
the thing.
Mystery. It's got to be a murder mystery.
Yeah, I think, like, I really want to meet you where you guys are in terms of just, like, the passion level. And I guess this is a criticism of the show, I guess. I don't know. I just, I'm fine with it. I don't have anything to complain totally about. But I also don't have anything to, like, rave about or, like, to come at you with disagreements. I was just like, I personally had a good time. I liked what the show was doing. Yes, I agree. It could have done so much better on so many different levels. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just in a really happy place.
I think the reason I'm so passionate about this is because I've been living alone in isolation for a year and haven't had anyone to talk to about anything I've been watching.
WA. She's got a life outside of this.
You're seeing people.
Yeah. Like, it's 27 degrees today. Last weekend, I was on a boat. Like, you know, things are just happening for me.
You're living this life. Yeah, we're locked inside. And I had no one to talk to about the shows I've been watching.
Yeah. Actually, this is making a whole lot more sense now. Yeah.
I do want to, but the problem is I can only reiterate, it's like I had such a good time with Martin Short, and like little things, like there's a bit where he is like they're talking to Sting, right? They're trying to get like some information out of Sting, and like then Sting's like, oh my god, yes, it was me, I did kill him. And just the way Martin Short just like is pulling his like lapel mic closer or just sidling closer, his fucking physical comedy is so good.
It's so good.
Like, he is an absolute star in this show. And any time that Oliver was on screen, I was having a good time, basically.
I really wanted... Yeah. There's other things in the show that felt like they were going to be important that just didn't come back. Like, the gut milk. Like, that just felt... That ended up just being a joke.
I think it was just an ongoing joke. I never thought it was going to be more than that.
Because it was always in the scene. Like, there was always the gut milk in the scene. There's always
maybe that'll be why What's-Her-Face was murdered in season two. Maybe she didn't pay her gut milk bill or something like that, and the lady in the basement killed her.
Maybe.
That's where we're left. We're left with a mystery. Who killed Bunny?
If we've just called it...
I personally think it's... we'll talk about that when we get to final thoughts.
Oh, wait, that's okay. One thing that I was like, oh, that's stupid, was in the final episode when Bunny comes up and talks to Mabel and Oliver. Yes. And Mabel's like, fuck you, you piece of shit, I'll fucking kill you. Like, the reaction is so insane. I like, it happened, and Angela and I looked at each other and we're like, well, that was really intense. Like, it was just so, like, yes, that woman is a cunt, absolutely. But we've never seen that amount of like vitriol and anger expressed.
That's
the sentence
I've ever heard. That woman's a cunt, absolutely. Literally the best sentence I've ever heard.
It's my catchphrase.
I think she said, how does it feel to be the most hated woman in the building, you grumpy bitch or something like that?
Yeah.
And I also was like, oh, it wasn't until afterwards, like, oh, okay, that's they need why. To set up for the murder.
It just doesn't feel like Mabel's character.
But no, it just felt so unnecessary.
Yeah. It was, it's so, like cruel. It's like, okay, just because she's mean doesn't mean you have to go there as well.
If Oliver had said it would have made sense. And he was standing right there.
But also, Bunny, I didn't hate Bunny. She's not wrong a lot of the time about this stuff. Like, pay your fucking bills. And, like, you are causing a nuisance. You're breaking into people's apartments every second episode. These people are fucking menaces. She's not wrong. I never hated Bunny. And I don't think that the show... That's the problem, too, is that if you're going to say that line, you have to get to the point where I agree with that vitriol. And I just didn't.
Yeah.
Bunny didn't deserve to be called... That.
I just liked her as a character. I was like, well, she makes me laugh whenever we have like a building meeting. I'm like, oh, cool. We're going to see everyone and Bunny's going to be an asshole, and that's great.
100% agree. Yeah.
There's also some things in this that didn't make sense to me. Like, there were just coincidences that happened that like didn't make the example just came to my mind. In the episode where they go into Nathan Lane's apartment and Mabel finds the secret door to the yes. room full of things. Mm. How did she know that was going to open?
She didn't. She was just looking.
She looks at the she looks at the plinth, moves it, and the door opens.
I think she was from memory, she was knocking and she knew it was hollow. And then
how did she know it was hollow?
I don't know.
It's like the things like that, it's like, okay, spend a little time. You're right, when you're talking about 45 minutes cut down to half an hour.
Yeah.
Maybe there was a reason. Maybe there was scuff marks on the ground or something that she could see that, you know, this door, there could be a door.
Yeah.
Little things like that. It's like just
attention to detail.
Attention to detail.
Yeah. Especially in a murder mystery show.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I get
that's my point. It's like there was things that just happened rather than there being explanations for it. It's like, I know I sound passionate, like I hated this show, but I enjoyed it.
You're doing what I do, Liam, which is what it's...
I'm conflicted. I'm just conflicted because...
It hurts more because you know the show has more in it.
It has so much potential to be amazing, and there's so many good parts of it.
Yep,
here are my final thoughts.
But the problem is, though, it's harder to talk about the good stuff when it's just like, that was a well-delivered line. Yeah. That was a good performance in that particular moment.
Yep.
When that's... Like, moment to moment, you can enjoy it and be frustrated by the overall effect, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
It's lesser than the sum of its parts. I fucking said it.
Any last words?
Final thoughts.
That's why you always leave a note.
Do you guys have any side notes? Liam, you didn't write anything down, so no.
I'm pretty sure I've just constantly brought them up as we've gone.
Damas, do you have any side notes?
I love that Jan didn't feel the need to clean the knife she used to stab herself and just chucked it in the vent. She's like... It's
well,
fine.
She stabbed herself, so she was in a hurry.
But she certainly has gone back to her apartment at some stage since then and would have cleaned the knife.
It also It also frustrates me that she's hidden it there. She would have been able to, like, there's going to be a time when he has been around.
She went back with Charles.
The entire
time.
To
Charles' apartment. The only time she left was to go to her bassoon thing.
Maybe.
I don't think she had been back to the apartment.
Oh, okay. All right. That's I just thought it was very... So she stabbed herself. She's walked over to the wall. Blood's not going anywhere. She's throwing the thing into the vent and then waddling back to the main entryway of her apartment and then lying down.
Yeah.
Silly.
There's little things like that I'm like, okay.
Oh, 100%.
All right.
Yeah.
She also could have just left the fucking knife next to her after she got stabbed. Like, if someone attacked her and then just dropped the knife, even if it was her own knife.
Yeah, it's like her fingerprint's going to be on it. It's her knife.
If they were already in the
apartment,
in the house, and grabbed one of her knives and stabbed her with it, I mean, better than bringing your own weapon, which might be tied back to you.
Yeah.
So it doesn't make her instantly the killer. Yeah. And wear gloves. It doesn't make it instantly suspicious. She could have just left it next to her.
Yes, but how would they figure out she stabbed herself?
That's the problem.
You know
it's
what I mean?
The fact that she hid it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It also frustrated me, though, that when she chose to hide it like that, whether or not she could have got back to it or not, right? Which is an interesting point. When you look at the Tim Kono murder... She had him dispose of the fucking evidence. Like, she didn't keep it for a keepsake or anything like that. Yeah. She didn't hide it. She got rid of it. Because she was smarter than that? It's like, that's what's... Again, it doesn't make sense from a character point of view. Anything else to ask?
Jane Lynch as Steve Martin's body double was just a silly gag that I enjoyed.
It was great.
And it tickled me every... It was like, quite her funny, as that character was just great.
Yeah. The idea that she was stealing his girlfriend.
Yeah. Just the kind of like bravado that Jane Lynch can bring to a scene, like that kind of
and
swagger,
also,
like just makes
Martin
me laugh.
Martin Short's reaction when he
sees her. Oh my God. I lost it. Whatever you've done, it's too much.
Yeah, it was great.
Oh, it's funny. Yeah. And just like for everyone at home, whether you thought this show was great or you hated it, I think we can all agree the chemistry between Steve Martin and Martin Short is fabulous. So if you haven't already or you haven't in a long time, please watch The Three Amigos.
I'm going to have to watch that again. It's been a long time since I watched it.
It's very funny. And
Who's the third amigo in that?
Chevy Chase.
Oh, wow. Yeah, should watch that again.
Yeah. So I feel like it's the only Chevy Chase film that I actually like. Because I can't deal with National Lampoons. It's too stressful.
For me to watch Fletch for a long time, I hear that's pretty good. That's the one people talk about as being sort of underappreciated of his. It's little observations. You were talking about how like they were tied up in the van and stuff like that at the end of the episode. six or seven or whatever it was.
How did they both get tied up?
That's the bit I couldn't figure out. How did Theo overpower both Mabel and Oliver, tie them up and get them into a van? Did he have a weapon? If he had a gun, sure, but he didn't have a gun. And
I guess you tie up Mabel first because Martin Short's going to be the weakest of the two.
Yeah. Martin Short is just screaming. Yeah.
But like, I it takes you, one of you to get past him to go and call the police. You know what I mean? Like, it's not that hard. And the fact that seeing them just cut from, we can't get through this door, to being tied in the back of the van, I was like, you need to prove to me how we got to that point.
That was so stupid.
That frustrated me. Getting Nathan Lane cast as an investor in a Broadway flop is a very cute little detail. I loved the reverse producers on that. And in general, as soon as Nathan Lane was in the show, I was like, you beauty, I'm in. I love Nathan Lane. Yeah. He can do no wrong. And he was fantastic in this as well.
Absolutely.
Just seeing him and Martin Short talk about all the like terrible theatre ideas was, like Splash the Musical, the tragedy of the pool not working and the men just diving.
All the chorus boys just going because they're committed.
That was one of the best scenes. And like, again, Martin Short just being fantastic, but him explaining like each one of them just like...
The bone crunching.
Yeah. There's some very good writing in this, and at the same time, some very bad writing in this.
Very bad writing, too. Just a couple of musings. I assume Oscar is getting a massive payout for being wrongly convicted and in prison for 10 years, right? Like, that kid is going to be a millionaire.
Yeah, if he's got a lawyer, he's going to do pretty well, I reckon.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you what I wish they did, and I would love them to do for season two, is actually have a companion podcast that goes with this show. Wouldn't have to be longer than 5 to 10 minutes per episode, but like every time an episode comes out, have a little 5 minute like episode of Only Murders in the Building, the podcast.
Yeah.
I just think it'd be so much
fun. And you could like, absolutely.
You could seed little like clues and details in there that you could look back on later on. It would just be a perfect extra level that would make the show that much more fun to watch.
I love that.
It's like, I think that right there is a good example of what this show could. There's so much potential for this show.
Absolutely.
That they just haven't hit the mark on it.
All right. What were our favorite and least favorite episodes? Liam, what was your least favorite episode?
I think you know.
It would have been episode 7, The Boy from 6B.
Yeah. Mm.
For all the reasons mentioned.
All the reasons mentioned above. Please see above.
Damask?
I think I'm going to go with episode 6 because we spent a lot of time with Detective Williams, but then like... And she does, like, this big thing, but then, like, we don't really deal with that or, like, get to spend any more time with her. And I was like, oh, I would have liked to, like, what are the real consequences of that? So I guess that one, yeah.
On that point, Rod, you said you wanted to talk about that.
I'll bring it up now because I don't want to do too much on it. But Dishonorable Mention went to episode 6 to Protect and Serve. The idea of the cop sending the fucking amateur podcast people real fucking evidence drives me insane. Yeah. There is no reasonable explanation why any decent cop would do that. I don't care what your home life situation is with your new baby on the way. Get fucked that any cop would do that. And that's the sort of shit that makes me not want to care about the show.
Mm.
It can't even get that shit right. Like, it just does not make sense. You cannot follow the show when it's doing crap like that. It drove me insane. It is a terrible, terrible choice, and it was a terribly written episode, and I hated it. But that wasn't my least favorite episode.
Oh, no.
It's also very... This show is beautiful. I think it looks really good.
At times. Mm. Oh, actually, something else about that episode, though, episode 6 I didn't like, was they were doing this thing with Mabel about how, well, true crime, you know, maybe it's unethical because it affects people's real lives, because they're talking about the Mabel situation and how it's real for her and Oscar.
Mm.
But they do that, like, they just half do it. It's like, do it for real or don't do it at all.
This is what I mean by this show could have been longer. Make a joke of
it or don't worry about it.
Like, if you're going to bring this stuff up, do episodes about it. Do it properly. Make a story about it. Don't rush it all into 10 episodes.
Especially if you're going to tell me that this affects real people and the cop's going to give the fucking amateur people the fucking phone. Anyway, episode 5.
Sure, that, how is that not the your least favorite episode? Okay, I want to hear.
Episode
6 was terrible for those little inclusions, right? The episode 5 twist, which is the one beforehand, where Mabel is being followed by tie-dye guy who turns out to be Oscar, who follows her into a fucking alleyway, who then they get in the car and drive together and have that awful, oh, I've been thinking about you for 10 years stuff. They figure out that it wasn't the Manhattan Bridge or whatever, Washington Bridge. It was this guy over and wherever it was in the boondocks or whatever and blah, blah, blah. That whole episode was trash. It was so poorly written. It had no flow. It was clunky as fuck. It was, they arrive at the place and then Oscar says, just leave it alone. I don't want to know about this anymore. And all of it. It was like a first draft. It was so poorly written.
Mm.
The entire thing. It was like, while the episode 6 was offensive because of the bad choices it was making, to me that episode was just terrible from a, on every level, the whole way through. It was like, this was just not considered well at all and should never have made it past to the stage of being filmed. I thought the script was just that bad for that entire episode. Favorite episode. What was your favorite episode, Liam?
What do we hear Damascus' favorite episode?
Yeah
episode mine was 6. Episode 6.
It's
just that Broad hated it more than me, so it sounded like he was listening.
I'm torn between two.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think the last episode was probably my favorite. Even though, like, the very ending frustrated me there. Then the last episode was great because with the explanation and everything. Also, Steve Martin's performance, like, physical comedy in this episode was very funny.
In episode 10. Yeah. Yes. 100%.
It was very good. Like, that whole idea of him being drugged up and trying to get around and that part where he gets up and makes a speech. But then isn't making the speech. Like, even though I saw that joke coming.
Yeah, we all saw it coming.
They still nailed it. It was hilarious. Yeah. You know what I mean? And also, Amy. Sorry, what's her
name? Ryan.
Amy Ryan going a little bit manic, and that was really cool as well. Mm-hmm. I like that. Mm-hmm. And also, I really enjoyed the true crime fans episode where they're in the room with them and everyone's like trying to having opinions on. And like you, and showing like the idea of these fans getting involved and having theories and stuff. I know. I just
it
really
also felt
the
like they were addressing the mystery of the murder
exactly
properly
yeah.
for the first time.
That's probably it. Right?
It was like they put it all on the board and they started like examining it and like remembering that this was a murder show too.
And like, and that also was like, that felt like, okay, they're the people that are actually involved, you know, listening to podcasts and stuff. It went back to the premise of the show,
yeah,
being like these three podcast fans. We're mm-hmm. doing this, and it's like, okay, yeah, they found more people like them, and they're a little bit weird. And they also found a good way to not have a kid come into the apartment because of that fourth one. So they had to go to school or something. So they wouldn't have a child in the apartment with them. I enjoyed the episode a lot.
Damask, what was your favorite episode?
I've kind of got two. So it's episode 3 and 4, just because of like moments in each episode. So we've got. Just watching Steve Martin try to inform the cat guy that he's being recorded just made me laugh. Like the moments where they're just genuinely terrible at what they're doing were like my favorite. So we've got
Was it like say anything if you consent? It's like no. Thank you.
Yes. Exactly. And then the other episode we've got the gang bringing Sting a turkey, which is just absolutely nonsensical. And yeah, we've obviously got that great stuff with Martin Short.
Not mentioned that Sting is definitely a vegan, right? Like,
yes. As soon as they did that, I was like, he's a
but
fucking.
But they never mentioned it.
He's like famously a yeah.
He's famously vegan, but they never mentioned the fact that they brought him a turkey.
Hilarious.
Like he wouldn't want it because he's vegan. Yeah. That made no sense to me.
I really enjoyed the moments when, they were trying to be good investigators and podcasters, but just not good and falling on their asses. They were cute moments for me.
I want to agree with you that episode 4, at that point, was my favorite episode when I got to it. I think the chemistry and, like, the buffoonery is really good. The idea of, like, going to Cinder Canning, Sarah Koenig, seeing in her office, seeing her surround, like Tina Fey, I thought was great in that role. The joke of her having all these interns that were just like her and wanting to be like her, I thought was really great. Her suggesting the turkey, And then them going like, we have to come up with our own turkey. And then they're like, oh, we just went with turkey in the end. just like that was very funny to me. I thought all the stuff with Sting was really good. I was surprised by that too, because when Sting came up in episode 3, I was like, oh, fuck, this is cringy. And then to use him for a really good episode, the next episode, I thought, oh, this is pretty good, actually. I enjoyed that one a lot. I didn't hate episode 7 as much as you did. I think I appreciate its ambition, even if its execution wasn't great. But my favorite episode was episode 10. Mm-hmm. I think the silliness of that episode really gave the finale some fantastic energy. The stuff with Steve Martin was doing, 100% agree with all that. I thought Martin Short was fantastic throughout the episode as well. It was just
the elevator joke. The going up and down the elevator was very
funny. That was very,
funny.
Very cute. Yeah. And it was like, yeah, it was the sort of stuff that I feel like the show just got a little bit messy in the middle.
Yeah.
It was like they had a really good idea on how to start the season, a really good idea about how to end a season, and then right in the middle of it got very lost. Very, very, very lost in its own concept and didn't really know what to do and fucked around for a bunch of times, which is where most of our bad episodes are, I think.
Yeah.
Predictions, hopes, and concerns. Do we have any predictions, hopes, and concerns going into season 2, which has been confirmed to be coming?
I think it's going to very quickly, this is my prediction, and also a concern, very quickly be, they're not going to be in trouble.
Oh,
at
yeah.
the start of the season, very quickly. And they're not going to
They're going to be cleared.
They're going to be cleared very quickly.
Yeah.
That's my prediction.
Two episodes
and concern.
Max. You can't have Mabel in prison the entire season.
By the end of the
season.
First episode, they're going to be back in the apartments.
Yes.
My hope is that, so Mabel, I think the gents will be cleared and Mabel will be, you know, in jail or whatever until like a
and
trial or whatever. And so they've got like an emotional connection to and huge motivation to solve it. So we might see, you know, Mabel in jail chatting to the boys being like, help me, I need help. And they'll be running around the city trying to figure out what happened, which I think will be
for
a great dynamic.
Long? You're going to keep Selena Gomez in jail for the
in
entire season?
In an orange jumpsuit? Maybe. I mean, she might get out on bail or something. I don't know.
They'll get her out because there's no way they're going to keep Selena Gomez
you
behind
reckon?
Plexiglass for the entire season.
They'll absolutely reboot Brazos. They'll do a reboot of Brazos because that's what shows do now is reboots.
Mm-hmm.
You could see them doing a thing where, they get
because
pulled in different
especially
directions.
Especially now that he's...
Oliver Putnam is getting, like, he wants to make a show that's based off the original podcast season. Brazos is coming back. And then Mabel is like her relationship with Oscar or something like that. And so that's like they want to do the podcast together, but their lives are becoming more complicated because they've got other people and things in them again. And then ultimately they're going to come back together to solve the mystery as they
think like obviously Tina Fey's character is doing the podcast on them. I don't think they'll necessarily be doing the podcast themselves.
I think they will. I think they'll...
They're going to have to.
They've built into too much. But I like the idea of the competing podcast. Or like Tina Fey is almost the bad guy.
Yeah.
It's like...
Tina Fey doing the bad...
She's so good. She plays bad people really well.
Yeah. Also, why was she there? Maybe she killed him.
Maybe.
Killed her.
My prediction is that one of the super fans of the podcast did it. To keep the show going because now it was over... something like that. It was one of the super
which
fans.
One?
I don't know which one. Probably the main one, but I couldn't say. You know, the one who was the most involved, the one who did the voiceover.
He's one of the ones of he's one of the Daily Show correspondents.
Oh right, okay. That's my prediction. It's going to end up being one of the that might have confronted Bonnie, might have seen Mabel having her thing with her outside.
Because she's also wearing one of the jumpers.
She's also wearing one of the tie-dye things. So my prediction ahead of the season even being fucking filmed.
See, that was like that whole idea of the tie-dye jumper was a good use of the mystery trope thing. Whereas like the whole idea of Chekhov's gun, if you're going to show a gun in a scene in the first act, it needs to go off in the last act, right? Mm-hmm. The whole idea of this that like he's selling the merch and everything. Mm. So that's the reason that this person has a tie-dye shirt. Like that was really, I thought that was really quite, that's good writing there, but I think they should have done more of that in the show. And that's probably the biggest issue.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of Hunting Seasons. You can find more of what we do via our website, huntingseasonspodcast.com. Our logo comes from Sean Kirkpatrick, aka at Shawnee Boy Draws. Our theme song and bumpers from Lucas Heil of Birthday Loyalty Club. Find links to their work in our show notes. You can also find myself, Broderick Gordes, on Twitter at bgordes, B-G-O-R-D-E-S, Damask.
You can find me on Twitter at maskymoo, M-A-S-K-Y-M-O-O.
Liam?
You can find me on Instagram at Liam G Draws or Twitch at twitch.tv/LiamDraws_. I know it's annoying. They're all different because I got that very late. And I'm also on Instagram at Liam Gordes, but
just to keep it.
I might need to bring this in. Also, the podcast, Shit Dates Podcast, on all good podcasting.
And when are you doing Arcane Arcade?
Arcane Arcade is going to be every second Wednesday from this Wednesday coming. So it's the 27th. And then fortnightly from then until we finish the campaign.
Cool.
Beautiful.
What time again?
7:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time.
Very good.
Nailed it.
Look at the story. Look at the character progression.
Is it Daylight Savings Time?
P.m. It is Daylight Savings Time, yeah.
Is it?
Yep.
So you wouldn't Google 7:30 AEST like a normal human?
AEDT.
AEDT.
Ah, okay. All right. Cool.
Next episode, we'll be back to discuss Squid Game Season 1. In the meantime, thank you again for listening. We'll see you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye. Thanks for having me. Good night, everybody. Absolutely.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.